Welcome to the Smart Family Podcast, where we want to help you love being home. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rob Meter and Tony Newhoff.
Okay, listeners, worst possible scenario as a parent, what would it be? I think at the top of the list would be being stuck on an airplane with a crying baby or a child having a temper tantrum. I mean, to be in an enclosed space like that, gosh, it makes me already feel uncomfortable just talking about it. Well, today we're going to be talking about how to hopefully avoid those types of situations or at least make them better. We are going to be talking about traveling with children, in particular, children who are neurodiverse and who are inflexible and or anxious. But, you know, you'll find out that there's actually tips in there for all children because in the end, you know, most kids are often inflexible and can get anxious in various situations. So I think what you'll hear today on the podcast is going to be useful no matter what your child is like. I'm Dr. Rob Meter, and I'm a pediatrician and co-host of the Smart Family Podcast, and I'm so glad you joined us today as we talk about this topic. Now, I've done a lot of traveling with my kids, and my wife and I have four children, and we've traveled. We've had the opportunity to travel. We love traveling. And you know what? We remember all those trips fondly, but I think God just kind of makes you forget all the challenging times. So you just remember all the good times. There were definitely challenges as well. And I know I learned a lot along the way, but I think today you're going to learn a lot in a very short time from our guest, Dawn Barkley. Now, Dawn is an award-winning author who has spent over 30 years working in various aspects of the travel industry. She first worked for her parents' company called Barkley Travel, and later she branched out into travel trade reporting and writing for numerous travel magazines and publications. So she is also an avid traveler herself. She holds a degree in both psychology and in marketing, and she has two children and lives in New York's scenic Hudson Valley. So she comes to us with a wealth of experience, and she has just compiled all this into her recent book called Traveling Different. And she's going to share with us today just some really, really practical advice for traveling with children, specifically who may be neurodiverse or on the autism spectrum, but really for all children who may have some anxiety about traveling or who may be less flexible when it comes to traveling. And, you know, if there's anything that requires some flexibility, it's new situations like traveling to different places. So please sit back and perhaps grab that world atlas and start leafing through it and thinking of places you might want to go as you listen to this conversation with Dawn Barkley. Dawn Barkley, welcome to the Smart Family Podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So tell us a bit about yourself and why you chose to research and write about the topic of traveling with children who are, quote unquote, anxious, inflexible, and neurodiverse.
Great. Thank you for asking. I have been a travel trade reporter on and off for the last 34 years. So I was very familiar with the field, and I've written for several different travel trade magazines. And when I needed a book, I'm one of these people who believe that you can get through anything as long as you have a book. Like when I got pregnant, I thought, you know, I don't have to worry about having a kid because I'll just read about it. That's not always true. And when I needed a book like this, it didn't exist. And that was unfortunate because I did have children who were anxious and inflexible. And I had grown up the daughter of two travel agents. And travel was definitely a part of my life. So it was very difficult to foresee a life without that because they couldn't deal with being in restaurants. They couldn't go into supermarkets or department stores without screening. it was very difficult. And so back in 2008, I even started interviewing for this book. I spoke to Tony Atwood, who's very big in autism, as I'm sure you know. I spoke to Ellen Littman, who's very well known for writing about ADHD, especially with girls. And then I hit a stumbling block because I couldn't find other people to interview. And it wasn't until the IBCCES, which is the International Board of Credentialing and Continuing Education Standards, came up with the Certified Autism Travel Professional designation that I knew exactly how I could write this book, because I knew I could interview all of those wonderful people who have spent a lot of time studying this particular population and how to work with them. And then they would share with me their clients, if the parents wanted to be spoken to, and a lot of them did. And then there was so much more information on the internet for me to work through as well. So that made it possible for me to write this book.
Well, that's great. And then, so you're a real travel expert. Obviously, you love traveling. You must have done tons of it in your life. And traveling with kids, I'm sure, as well. And I have too. I mean, I have four kids. We have actually traveled, you know, many places around the world. And some people have to travel out of necessity, I mean, just to get from one place to another. But maybe just take a step back and say, why do you even recommend traveling with children in the first place? I mean, some parents would say, like, I'd love to get away from my kids. But why should families consider traveling together?
Because I think that travel makes your child a world citizen, a global citizen, and teaches them about the world and the fact that there are people that are different than them and have totally different lives, and that's fine. I believe truly that the majority of my education came from travel. I was lucky enough to be traveling from age two. I believe that there'd be a lot less bias and prejudice in the world if more people traveled and understood that it's not just their way that's the right way.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. You learn so much about yourself too when you're traveling. And you know, our kids sometimes had to miss some school because they were traveling. But I think what they learned on the road was probably about as more maybe than they would have learned in a classroom during that week or two or that they were away. So
absolutely,
I hear you. You know, it's easy to talk about the downsides of traveling with kids. Many parents, I'm sure, have horror stories about, you know, being stuck on a plane with their child. But what are some advantages actually to traveling with their kids? Are there any?
I'll give you an example. My husband wanted us to go as a family to Europe a few years back. And I've been to so many places, every place on this cruise I'd been to. And I really wanted to go to someplace I hadn't been. And he sort of insisted, he said, you know, if we don't go to London and Paris first, it'll be like coming to America, like somebody from Europe coming to America and going to Omaha. No offense to people from Omaha. It's lovely, but it's the whole, that's not the first place people are thinking of. So I said, okay, we'll go. And by seeing, say, Paris and the Champs-Élysées from my son's point of view, really made it very special for me. Or when my daughter wanted to go to the flea markets in I'm trying to remember, it's not Camden, it might be Camden Town in London. And I saw a totally different version of what I would have. I probably wouldn't have gone to those places, but because they wanted to, I saw something I might not have seen otherwise. And I kind of got to relive the love I had for those cities by seeing it through my children's eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. I remember going to some places that I'd been to as a kid, and I just loved actually showing them to my kids. And it kind of made me think too back to my childhood. So
yeah,
I agree. It can be challenging too, though. And let's talk about that a little bit now, because like I said earlier, you know, traveling with kids can seem like a recipe for disaster for some families. It can be stressful. I mean, if you think of the definition of stress, it's doing something new and unexpected. Traveling is that for sure. You are going to someplace new that you haven't been before. And so it's going to be stressful. What are some aspects of traveling that can be particularly challenging for younger kids and those that are maybe more, you know, anxious or less flexible?
Great question. Now, what I found and what was a surprise to me writing this book is that the special needs travel tips that I found are even helpful for neurotypical children. And that is because when any child is taken out of their comfort zone, they get anxious and inflexible. And why not? Mm-hmm. You know, you're used to a routine, and perhaps children cling to routine more than adults, but neurodiverse children cling to routine far more than even neurotypical children. So it's important that they have a frame of reference and they have some predictability. And the way you do that is by planning the trip far before you're going to go and experiencing some aspects of the trip ahead of time so that it's familiar to them. So what do I mean by that? It means that before you go to a hotel, perhaps you stay at a relative's house for the night so you see what it's like to sleep in a place other than your own home. And by doing that, you'll see what the child needs, so you'll be able to better prepare for a longer, more expensive trip, but they'll also have the frame of reference. So if it works out well, you can say, oh, we're going to go to a hotel and it'll be just like that time we stayed at Aunt Sally's house. Mm-hmm. It means that perhaps you will preview any part of the trip that you're going to take either through a social story, or you will do it through a visual schedule, or you will do it through watching videos. And thank goodness there are tons of videos out there that can portray any part of a trip for your child, even the specific hotels, the rides at the amusement park. If you're going on a camping trip, perhaps you take a camping trip to the backyard for a night. So you can even go to airports and get tours of the airports. You can get involved in a group like Wings for Autism, which did put everything on hold for COVID, but I'm hoping they're coming back now. But a lot of airlines will have programs that'll walk you through so the child can experience what the airport is like before the day of the flight. So all those ideas, even reading picture books that have to do with travel so they can see what their favorite characters did in certain situations, is a way to introduce the child to travel.
And you're right. I mean, those are things for all kids.
Yes.
Would make it a more enjoyable experience. And then if it's more enjoyable for the kids, it's obviously it's more enjoyable for the parents as well.
Absolutely.
But, you know, you mentioned the COVID delay. I'm sure that's, you know, a downside to everybody's travel plans. You know, it was really tough for the last 2 years to travel anywhere. So maybe families are just starting to travel again for the first time. And they might be thinking about where should we go? What are some things that maybe families should think about as they plan their itinerary? What are some things that they should maybe try to avoid when traveling with kids who might be a bit anxious or inflexible?
Well, I think what they should avoid is thinking it's their trip and not their child's trip, and really scheduling everything around their own interests and not their child's. In my book, there are a lot of certified autism centers that have had training to take care of people on the spectrum, and that will also help young children that are neurotypical, autism-friendly resorts and venues and hotels. But to me, the heart of the book is a chapter toward the end that deals with special interests, because children on the spectrum tend to have very circumscribed interests, and they can think about them for 16 hours a day. I mean, it's their thing, and that's great. So what I did was try to think of all the interests I could, and then write up where people would find museums and venues to get involved with things like that. So that if you're going to Wyoming and your child is crazy about dinosaurs, there are several museums that you can take that child to, and that's going to make the trip very special for the child. So even when things are difficult for that child, there's something to look forward to and something to point to. So I believe that if you are, you know, if you want time on your own, then great. Go to a resort that has a kids club, hopefully one that has training for children on the spectrum if your child falls on the spectrum. But even not, that's going to give you some private time during the day and also give your child some fun things to do. And then in the evening, you can come together. I think you have to realize that your days of traveling just for you are over until the child is gone and has graduated from school and is on their own.
Yeah. And you know, one thing that I learned as well when my wife and I were traveling with our kids, don't overschedule yourself. I, you know, when you're at home, it's easy to kind of do two or three things that are fun in a day. But when you're traveling and you don't have that home base, we found out pretty quickly, plan for one thing per day. And then, you know, because the rest of the time looking for a place to eat, you're settling into a new hotel. I mean, everything else just that's routine at home just takes longer when you're on the road. So we tried to pack like two things into a day or three things, and we found that it was just way more stressful. So we just said one thing a day, that's it.
I'm so glad you pointed that out, because I have parents in the book who are saying, oh, I can't tell you how many pictures I have where I'm carrying my nine-year-old on my back because he fell asleep because we tried to do three things in the day. And we had to learn that we can't go at the same pace now that we did when we were single or when we were just married before kids. And there is one family that I spoke to who said, you know, when we go on a camping trip, we've learned through experience that that first day is just a decompression day. And we don't right. schedule anything so that they can just get used to everything. So it really is, when I call the book Traveling Different, it's because yes, when you have children, you really do have to travel different. It has to be a child-centric trip with tons of advanced preparation. And if you have kids on the spectrum, you have to think of every aspect of that trip and how it's going to work. And that's the way I divided things up. So it covers every single aspect of the vacation.
Yeah, no, exactly. And also realizing, I guess, that just because you might enjoy something doesn't mean your kids are going to automatically enjoy it. I remember one yes. time we were lucky enough to travel to Australia, and my wife and I were looking forward to seeing the Great Ocean Road. Well, we got there on a day, I think it was the end of a long day, and the kids, you know, had been sitting in the back of a car, and finally we got there and we're like, look guys, Great Ocean Road. And they were just not enthusiastic about it at all. And we looked out at each other and got out of the car and said, we'll just enjoy this moment for us. And they can just sit there and probably play on their tablets for the next hour or two. And we'll just enjoy this part of the trip together. And it's not their thing.
Yeah, you have to see it through their eyes. And you said the magic word, tablet, electronics, always, noise canceling headphones, always, your go-to bag with all the foods they like and their fidget toys and whatever's going to keep them occupied. So there's always an alternative.
Yeah, no, that's great. I love that. What kinds of experiences and destinations do you think really suit kids who are anxious and neurodiverse? I mean, you actually mentioned some activities that kind of surprised me, like skiing and diving, even being therapeutic. Tell me more about that.
That surprised me also. And the thing about golf, well, equine sports, dude ranches, and also diving and skiing, is that they are therapeutic because they're individual sports. With diving, I think that was the one that surprised me the most. And I write up some people who have done great things with diving and said, you know, I love the feeling of compression. I love that suit because I guess that's why, you know, weighted blankets work too. They like that kind of sensory input. And it's perfect with the suit, but also being underwater with the quiet and with seeing the fish and not having to interact with people and deal with social situations, it's very peaceful. So the same thing with skiing. These are all things I can't do, unfortunately. I'm terrified of these things, but I think it's wonderful. Golf also, you could travel all over the world with golf. You know, there's always a great course to play, and it's something of a repetitive nature to practice your swing again and again and again. And that's something that kids on the spectrum like to do things again and again and again. So that can be a great bonding experience. And I list different family-oriented courses that maybe have big discounts for kids, or kids can come free. And those were even right up, like I said, dude ranches, because you can interact with the horses, which is very quieting and nice. But nature trips are very helpful. There's a national parks pass that lets people in on the spectrum for free. So I do, when you say destinations, I list a number of destinations that are either places like Mesa, Arizona. The whole city is autism friendly. They've all gotten certified. Visalia, California just went that way. Myrtle Beach and Surfside in South Carolina, same thing. So we're getting tourist boards who get involved and then pull local hotels and restaurants and museums and get them to take the training so that the whole city can be a certified autism center.
So I'm curious, what makes a city or a place autism friendly? What are some aspects of it that give it that designation?
The staff have been trained in how to deal with the children in an empathetic way. And they say you have a restaurant, for example, that has been trained correctly. They'll understand when you come in that your child might not be able to speak or order for themselves. They might have the ability to go off the menu and make them something that they want. There might be low lighting. There might be quieter areas. They know that you may give a credit card and have to leave because the child has a meltdown. So they're going to take the credit card in advance. So they're going to be more understanding. For museums, it might be that they have days with low lighting or less crowds. Children's museums are often very positive because there's a lot of hands-on activities. Right. So there's very sensory friendly.
Right.
So that it's sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, you alluded to it earlier because it sounded like that would make those places better for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
So good example there again. So sometimes we have a choice about how we travel somewhere, whether we take a car, a plane, or train. But are there some modes of transportation that are better or worse for neurodiverse kids?
Hitchhiking is probably a bad choice.
That's right.
Yes. Sorry. I would say it's going to depend on your child. There are some children who are absolutely going to adore trains. They are very comforted by the fact that just love watching the wheels, love the motion of the train, love watching the doors open and close. It's predictable. There are other children who might prefer to be in a car because you can make frequent stops, find playgrounds along the way and favorite restaurants along the way that can be an outlet if they're getting antsy. There are some kids who are plane spotters, and there are actually apps that you can use to see what plane is overhead and all the information. They may be, you know, really obsessed with planes, so going on a plane is going to make the trip for them. Mm-hmm. And also cruises. There are groups like Autism of the on the Seas who have specifically organized group cruises for people on the spectrum and their families. So you're with people that understand what you need. There are five cruise lines, the five major cruise lines, who have devoted a lot of effort and energy to making themselves autism friendly.
Yeah. Well, so that's interesting. And I think airplanes probably scare people the most. And that's true for, I think, almost any parent, because there are some times when you really have to sit in your chair and follow the rules. And it's a crowded space often. Yeah. What are some things that would make that experience better? Maybe not just for neurodiverse kids, but maybe for all kids.
Well, again, having the go-to bag with all the things that they like helps, so that if you can bring some of their favorite foods on board, order the special meal that's going to be best for your child. I have a whole very long chapter on airlines, so it's impossible to cover everything here. Yeah. But I will say some people recommend sitting up front, as far up front as you can, so you're not seeing as much distraction from the people in front of you.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You probably don't want to be near the toilets because of the smell, and the children are very scent adverse. Some people recommend waiting until the last minute to get on the plane so that there's less waiting time. One of my favorite pieces of advice is to bring something for the child to push. So like buttons to push, because that way they're not pushing on the flight attendant button. And you're going to preview all this for your child. You're going to preview what the feeling of the plane is like. I mean, I recommended just going in a car and closing your eyes on a bumpy road, because that's kind of what turbulence is going to feel like when you're on the plane. So the child will have that frame of reference. But there's so much. You want to let the people on either side of you know that your child, you know, might be anxious or inflexible or be on the spectrum, so that they're aware. Some people bring little goodie bags with an explanation of their child's challenges, so that there's some empathy. You know, it doesn't hurt to give away chocolate.
Yeah,
on bribery. There's so many things you can do, but I'd say just bring the electronics, bring the noise canceling headphones, bring an eye mask if the light is going to be upsetting to the child. You know, you're going to know what your child is affected by most. You're going to know best, and you should act accordingly.
Yeah, you know, and on that note, I've always found it helpful to book traveling through a travel agent because they often know like what kind of plane you're going on, what seats are the best, or and which ones are available, and how to order special meals. You know, I've always appreciated the advice of a travel agent to kind of know those details. You know,
yes.
Stuff that I wouldn't know. So something else that I would probably recommend for any family traveling on an airplane.
Absolutely. And at the back of the book, I have a list of all the certified autism travel professionals that I interviewed, as well as ones that I didn't include their comments on, but and how to find right. others, because there are a number of them that if they're trained on how to work with a child on the spectrum, you know that they're going to be great for if your child is just inflexible or anxious. So really right. a good resource, because it costs you nothing, you know, and it can really make your trip.
Yeah, no, I agree. So let's say we're on our trip of a lifetime and we're all having a great time. And that's, of course, when the wheels fall off and, you know, the kid doesn't get what he ordered for dinner and a big meltdown happens. You know, what should we do when our children get overwhelmed? And what are some strategies at that point?
Yeah, I just want to say that the whole purpose of the book was to avoid those meltdowns. I know they're inevitable, yeah. but if you follow yeah, enough of the advice, you may avoid them. I think the number one most important thing is to not worry about what other people are thinking around you, because the number one person is your child. And I have a whole chapter, well, a whole section about what to do and how to react to inconsiderate onlookers who might just be rude or just, you know, thoughtless. But you want to take your child to a quiet place to decompress. You want to let them know that you're there for them and that you hear them and you understand. You may want to get them a snack because maybe they're hungry, but you want to try to get them away from whatever trigger. It might have been crowds. So you may want to therefore get to a less crowded place. And you're going to know your child best, but it might be the smells. It might be the sounds. You don't know ahead of time, but if you remove them from the situation, if you can, it helps. Yeah. Now, if they melt down when they're strapped to their airplane seat, that's going to be a little harder,
yeah.
which is when the electronics can come in again.
Or yeah, the food. No, it's true. I know. I mean, it's some, you know, we talk about screen time with kids all the time and, you know, how we need to try and avoid that. But honestly, I always give parents a special dispensation for when you're traveling, you know, use those screens to your advantage. They can be mesmerizing for kids and they can get you through a otherwise pretty turbulent few hours.
Yeah. And also keep your sense of humor. I was on a flight where my daughter, first of all, my son vomited all over me and I couldn't leave. I couldn't change. I just put my sweater on over my silk blouse. And then at the same time we were taking off and my daughter's ears were bothering her and she was shrieking.
Oh, yeah.
And what can you do? So my husband reached into the pocket in front of him and took out the barf bags and created took out crayons and created barf bag theater. And for the next hour, he created a barf bag puppet show and it worked. My kids still, that's like one of their favorite memories. And it's because he was, you know, used some ingenuity and he also used humor.
Well, I was going to ask you if you had any sort of favorite experience to kind of, you know, leave our listeners on a high note. Do you, or a family that you know, yourself, any favorite experiences that you have where you maybe you were a bit anxious about or they were anxious about the vacation, it turned out to be very memorable?
You know, we took a cruise to Europe. We flew to Europe and we took a cruise out of Rome that did France and Spain and Italy. And it was just really wonderful because it was NCL and Norwegian Cruise Lines has Howl at the Moon, which is a dueling piano bar. My husband plays piano, so he started playing with the band and we became very good friends with them. We still have cruised with them several times since then. But what was special is because they pulled my son up on stage and he had just taught himself how to play Dream On by Aerosmith. So he was playing and singing. My daughter got up and danced. My husband played with the band every night. And, it was a memory that we'll never be able to duplicate. It was so special because the people made us feel special and the kids got to get known and So that was one of my favorite times. I don't know that anybody else can get a hint. You know, I don't know if that's something that'll translate to other people, but it was good for us.
Well, but it's just, it just, you know, shows you that sometimes the unexpected things make for the best memories, of course.
And yes.
But yet the best trips probably start with planning ahead as much as possible and just being intentional about, and realistic, I think, about what your goals are on a vacation.
Thank you. Sort
of the bottom line. Yeah. I love the suggestion about scuba diving. I'd never thought, but gosh, that is so true. That quietness, the compression, you know, the feel of that wetsuit sort of pressing on you and then going down to a certain depth, that's got to be very comforting for a lot of kids.
And there are people who are specially trained to work with kids on the spectrum with two or three helpers that are down there with them. And all those places are listed. And then there's always places where you can practice, but there are some that are certified autism centers as well.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, Dawn, thanks so much for sharing your wealth of knowledge with us on this topic. I mean, it's so important, and I do hope many families get out and travel after we've had a bit of a hiatus there due to COVID. But I think a lot of families are traveling again, and hopefully they can benefit from some of the tips you've given to us here today. Where can people find out more about traveling with kids, and where can we find the book, and what's it called actually?
Oh,
where can
good.
We find it?
Yes, the book is called Traveling Different: Vacation Strategies for Parents of the Anxious, the Inflexible, and the Neurodiverse. And it is available at all major, well, it will be available August 15th everywhere. Right now it's available for pre-order by hardcover or audiobook, but the digital version won't be out until the 15th. You can't pre-order that. And I'm backing up the book with a website, with a blog, so that things keep changing. And that's one other tip that I have to give to your listeners, is that just because I've written something, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's right for your child. And so, and designations change, and so do addresses and phone numbers. So it's really important to do your due diligence. If you see something I've written, be sure to call ahead of time and find out if what autism friendly, what it means to them, means the same thing for you, because you know what your kid needs. And just check out that whatever they offer is going to be offered when you're in town. Because some of these places, like some museums, have autism or sensory special days, but it's one Saturday a month and it might not be the Saturday you're in town. So in any case, my website is travelingdifferent.com. I also update on Twitter under Traveling Diff with two Fs, and on Facebook. And if my email address is in the book, and if your listeners have had a different experience than what I've written, or they've found different places that they'd recommend, or they found that someplace that I mentioned wasn't as friendly toward people on the spectrum as I had made out, please write to me. And also write to me if what I've written has helped open up the world for you, because that will make having written it all worthwhile. That's my intention, to make the world more available and accessible.
Great. Well, there's huge value in that. And thanks for helping with this very practical advice to hopefully make the world more accessible for many, many more families.
Thanks,
Dawn Barkley,
so much.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, as those of you who are regular listeners to the podcast know, our motto or our theme is love being home. But perhaps after listening to this episode, you might love leaving home and traveling somewhere. I hope that our conversation today did indeed spark a bit of a travel bug in you who are listening to this and who have small kids or younger kids, at least, who may be a little bit hesitant about traveling. And you may have some hesitation because of that very reason. You know, traveling is indeed eye-opening and a great experience for kids, but it does come with its challenges. And I think, if anything, Dawn has shared with us today, it's, you know, be prepared, be intentional, do some research, you know, make some real practical preparations to kind of, you know, anticipate some worst case scenarios so that you're ready for it. And just be realistic about your expectations about where you're going to go and what you're going to do there. And then, you know, if it's anything is helpful in dealing with inflexibility, it's requiring us to maybe perhaps be a bit more flexible to absorb some of that when our kids are having perhaps a hard day or they're just at the end of their rope after a long day of traveling, perhaps in a sensory overloaded environment. So, however, don't let that deter you. I really do hope that, especially after this recent hiatus in traveling with COVID, et cetera, you know, that you do get out there and see the world. There's just so many places to explore. And whether that's right in your own backyard, in your own state or province, or whether it's outside of the country or around the world, you know, wherever that might be, I do hope that you're inspired to do that. So check out Don Barclay's website, travelingdifferent.com, and grab a copy of her book, Traveling Different, Vacation Strategies for Parents of the Anxious, the Inflexible, and the Neurodiverse. Well, that's it for today. Thanks so much for joining us on the Smart Family Podcast. We do hope you found this episode informative, and please do share it with others who you feel might benefit from the information that we provided today. Do go on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. We'd love to get some feedback, and all that feedback does draw attention to the podcast so that others can find out about it as well and listen to some episodes that may help them love being home.